Welcome in our new sponsor, Middle Kingdom Wrestling. Were you excited to see some Chinese pro wrestling when AEW announced that they would be featuring Chinese wrestlers on their program? You can now watch Chinese pro wrestling right now by checking out Middle Kingdom Wrestling, aka MKW. MKW is the top pro wrestling organization in China today. They are a unique pro wrestling company with Chinese characteristics. MKW has showcased, developed, and promoted wrestling in other countries such as Nepal, Vietnam, Thailand, South Korea, and more, with particular focus on countries that are part of China's One Belt, One Road initiative. MKW's live broadcasts in Japan consistently attract millions of fans, even often reaching 10 million concurrent viewers. Besides checking out MKW on YouTube and subscribing to MKW, you can also purchase the first ever international wrestling merchandise from Middle Kingdom Wrestling on ProWrestlingTees.com. It says, in Chinese, "Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle." This is a great, great art piece on the shirt. It's funny, it's positive. Best of all, it promotes wrestling and the Chinese culture. So take the call to action from MKW. Don't lay flat, get up and wrestle. Middle Kingdom Wrestling.
The upcoming presentation is a two-man power trip of wrestling podcast production.
Welcome to the Business of the Business podcast. I am your co-host, JP John Paz. With me, of course, is my co-host, Mr. Trump Matey himself, the wizard, Mr. Lavi Margolin. Lavi, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing good. I think last week we were talking about the heat. This week it was just as bad, if not worse. But John, I know you have so many podcasts. I'm not sure if you've thought about it, but episode 87 here, 12 of Trump Mania. So this is our 99th podcast together. So a big milestone coming up next week.
Yes, big time, big time. I love it. As far as this week, I feel like a lot of stuff going on in the world of wrestling, but nothing, it's bigger than Vince McMahon. I don't think maybe for a long time, nothing will be bigger than Vince McMahon, but what the heck is going on over there in WWE as he just announces via Twitter that he is retiring?
Yeah, that one, I think that caught everyone by surprise at this point. I mean, you know, in the wrestling bubble, those that are thinking about, like, sort of, for most of us, many of us, Vince McMahon is sort of like all we've known, meaning that we know the history, but like, it's always been since at least 1982, even going back to 1980, depending on when the power exchange happened informally. It's always been Vince McMahon running WWF, as I always like to reference, or WWF, WWE, and so on. And it seemed like impossible, like that he would have to like die in this role to ever like concede the promotion. But, you know, history apparently catches up to you. And certainly with Me Too movement a few years ago, no one was immune who allegedly engaged in such activities of various forms that even if you have control of the company, if your main revenue sources are television contracts and sponsorships and you're emphasizing doing good in the community, when you have this track record that's coming out in various forms, yes, you can keep control of your company, but what will it be worth and what continued embarrassment will occur? So, you know, while it seemed impossible, to me it felt like time was ticking. And for him to give Stephanie the interim role, like it really showed like that there was something happening here. And now we see that not only is it permanent for Stephanie, but now she is the co-CEO with Nikon.
Man, it's crazy to think what else was out there. What other stories or what else was kind of brewing that may have hurt the WWE in the long run. So it might have been better for him just to step aside and not hurt the company and just kind of deal with it privately. You know what I mean? Like, don't let the company get in the way of what else other was going to come out.
Yeah, 100%. And again, these are all allegations as far as we understand it. When somebody signs non-disclosure, I'd assume that means that there's a concession that something occurred. We haven't seen all the details of those things, but just from what's out there publicly, right? Like something occurred in the 80s, and then you zoom forward to, you know, an incident in a tanning salon, right, in the 2000s, and then allegations into the 2000s of, you know, inappropriate relationships with staff and talent and so on. So if somebody's this way, you know, I would assume it's not out of the realm of possibility. Other things occurred in the 80s and the 90s, you know, and so on, that if somebody is emboldened to act in such a way, right, it wouldn't be, you know, out of question that potentially there's many more people that didn't feel comfortable standing up, didn't feel that they needed to stand up, disrupt their lives in such a way. But it seemed like it was really becoming pattern behavior the way that we heard about it. But yeah, it seemed to make sense if somebody would feel that they could act this way, that it would have potentially have happened many times before when you fill in, you know, the gaps.
I think it's funny people are using Paul London as the source. And it's funny, in the past, our buddy David Bixenspan was saying like, oh, Paul London came out with all this information about like certain wrestlers. And I'm thinking to myself, he is not a good source at all. If anybody's ever met him or knows him, whatever, I mean, he's a great guy and he's a great interview, but like, never go like he's 100% accurate, or never anybody's 100% accurate in sources. But I just thought that was funny. People like, oh, but Paul London said this. Well, it's like, well, let's take everything with a grain of salt. Even Paul London, even if it's somebody else, let's Rene Dupree, whoever. It's like, let's just take it with a grain of salt for a second, okay? You know what I mean? Like, sometimes it gets a little like, okay, somebody throws a story out there, and then it's like, oh, but this wrestler said it. And like, you know, this guy's track record. You know what I mean? Like, it's never like, never good to listen to all these different sources, even during like when Chris Benoit died. Oh, let's interview everybody under the sun and get their opinions. It's like, let's go to credible sources. And sometimes they're hard to find.
Yeah. I guess thankfully I sort of missed that whole thing with Bix. And I actually, candidly, I do believe he's like one of the best writers, if not the best writers, when he's really like on his game with pro wrestling. Love the Between the Sheets podcast with Chris Zellner. I'll never catch up on all of them, but I love that. But Bix, I can't actively follow him on Twitter anymore. It just overwhelms me. So what I do is every few weeks I'll just like scroll through his Twitter feed and catch up, because there's just too much of that sometimes. But in terms of speaking about you know, resources and so on, as we've talked about off air, you know, somebody who's a famous wrestler, you know, left Ring of Honor under seemingly bad terms, and then suddenly was like DMing me like all this like information and so on. And like, at first it was like, oh, cool, you know, this person's famous, you know, I respect them or whatever. And then after a while, it's just like, it's just too much. And you're, like, at first you're like, this is cool. And then it like turns into one of those like bad, like, can this person like leave me alone? Like, you're not sure if you should ignore them or block them after a while. Like, yeah, it's really important. Like, if you're going to build up your sources, like, you have to find them credible in other ways too, not just when it's convenient for you. So definitely a good point there.
They do a good job, as Bix and Chris, with their podcast, of really going into all the scandals and stuff. So if anybody's really interested in delving deep into the Vince McMahon scandals, there's more than you would imagine, if you could believe. I mean, there's so much stuff throughout the years. It's almost like now they finally get them. You know what I mean? There is so much out there on Vince. It's just like, wow, like, like there must be stuff that we didn't even know about. But I mean, if you just look it up, I mean, there's a million. Or if you follow their podcast, Between Sheets, I mean, there's a million scandals with Vince.
Yeah, and I was honored to join them. Maybe it's a year ago at this point to talk about a 1991 when Undertaker got locked in the coffin with the Ultimate Warrior. But like we recorded over two late nights and like I was completely exhausted. So much respect to them. I love putting out this 1 hour podcast. So to be able to do that 4 to 8 hours a week, just in terms of the Prime podcast, respect for that. I mean, John, you're doing that with 7 or 8 podcasts, if my number is correct. So respect to anyone that can keep up that that pace.
So with Stephanie, and get back to Vince, and as far as like current day stuff here, Stephanie missed a branding opportunity, you think, on SmackDown?
Yeah. So so for me, I was like looking at like the clock and the calendar in Rhode Island. I was like, how much time do I have before I have to observe the Sabbath? And suddenly, like Stephanie's music hits 8 o'clock. I was like, perfect. You know, whatever she says, I'm going to be able to catch this. And I didn't know what it was going to be, but to be like, thank you, Vince. I mean, it's his daughter. We know that ingrained, you know, she's always like a fighter for him. There's that famous 9/11 video where she compared, of course, the attacks on the World Trade Center to attacks on her father by the federal government in terms of steroid related allegations. So I don't think she would act like that today. She was what, like a teenager or in her early 20s, you know, early 20s in that period, early to mid 20s. So, but like, thank you, Vince. Like, sure. Yeah. We all love wrestling for many of us, not all of us, certainly from the South and so on, but like for many of us Northeasterners, especially like WWF is what hooked us. So yes, thank you, Vince. But I wouldn't thank you, Vince, for somebody that's leaving like in a complete embarrassment. That's apparently, you know, at the very worst, at the very least, crossed inappropriate work boss relationships at work, from what we understand. And, you know, and at the other end of the spectrum, potential sexual misconduct. You know, again, this is all still coming out. So I don't think that was appropriate. I think she lost her moment to shine and be like, I am, you know, the female co-CEO of one of the biggest entertainment companies in the world. I don't know if you could say the biggest pro wrestling company in the world, you know, in terms of the branding, but like, I would be like, I'm here, I'm in charge. Things are different today and it's all about the fans, you know, like that was a missed opportunity for me. I felt like to totally rebrand it more like, to stay like try and paint Vince as the good guy. It's just embarrassing. And like, he's leaving. So yeah, as family member, as his daughter, you have to be one way, but I think that was just a missed opportunity. Some of the interesting other things that I was looking for was, I also quickly went on to catch like, what's Wall Street's reaction? Now the announcement I think came at 4:05. If I'm correct, Wall Street closes the bell at 4:15. So not a lot of time for action in terms of public trading. But also there's the after hours trading, which is kind of frustrating. Like, why can people trade after hours? But you can get a little bit of a sense of what's going on there with those traders. And things were, there wasn't a lot of market action, but things were positive. You didn't see things going down or people panicking that Vince wasn't there. I think the company sort of, they created it smartly, right? Like if everything was known, right? Stephanie stepped down, I'm going to be with my family. Things broke with Vince. Stephanie came back. Not that, you know, she would have been involved in any of this anyway, but like her hands were sort of clean in terms of being not being tied to the company actively while the scandals were breaking. And then she sort of takes over sort of like as the White Knight. So yeah, Wall Street didn't panic. It's always been that like narrative, like would Wall Street panic? And Monday will be interesting, but I think things will be okay in that sense.
Yeah, it's up to $66 now. So, I mean, we'll see obviously what happens on Monday, but that's just very interesting to kind of see that it after hours trading went up rather than down.
Yeah, yeah. It was always like Dave Meltzer narrative and others sort of like, well, Wall Street doesn't believe that anyone else can run the company but Vince. And now, like, you see it. Maybe it was softened because, you know, AEW now and Tony Khan is so visible, even though you know, they're not doing the type of business like WWE worldwide, but like you could see like, okay, somebody else could run a pro wrestling company too. And like, and also Stephanie is just so like ingrained in the company and everyone knows Nick Khan also. So like, I think things were safe, you know, in that way.
With that, it's interesting. Like, does he still have an office in Titan Towers? Because it's funny because technically he's still the owner of the company. And he has 80% control of the board as well. So, I mean, they better not piss him off or do anything against him. Like, you know what I mean? He's still kind of the owner, still the boss. So they still have to kind of fall in line to him.
Yeah, no, it's a good question. Like, I've been curious about that too. Yeah, like they'll have to report to him if he doesn't like the way things are going. But it's like the question is sort of like, will Stephanie shape it in her own vision or will she like check everything by Vince? And I think like, I think she's ready to like shape it in her own vision and sort of like prove herself if she, you know, is motivated to do so. Like, or, you know, maybe like Vince is a step removed. Maybe he's more open to selling his shares now and maybe they can explore more actively a sale. And I think Stephanie, like, she loves being like the face of philanthropy and like women's leadership and so on. Like, if she retires from WWE with like a huge nest egg, then she could be an active investor, philanthropist and so on. So she doesn't have to go away from the public eye. So it's kind of like, is her passion really to lead WWE? Either keep things going or make changes, or could this just be a catalyst towards more of a sale one day?
Thing is, Bruce is still the head of creative, right? So he's a Vince guy. Stephanie, which people, I don't know if they realize this or not, but she's the total Vince girl. I mean, really, I mean, her and Vince are very, very tight and very close. So is it one of the things where puppet master regime kind of thing, or would Nick Khan not stand for that? And where does Nick Khan kind of fall into place?
Yeah, I think Nick Khan, like, especially when like it seemed like Stephanie and especially Triple H certainly like lost power, that he started putting in his own people and like cutting out Stephanie's people, like at the VP management type of level. So I think you'll see like a recalibration in that way where Stephanie will now grab more power and certainly Triple H will have more power as well. And like, it'll be up to Nick Khan. He did get a promotion, meaning that he went from president now to co-CEO, but like, what's it going to be like and what will work for him? Like he has, I was just looking it up before we went on the air. Time moves quickly. He, about 2 years ago, he joined the company under a 5-year incentive laden contract, meaning that like he gets more money the longer he stays. And if he doesn't, if he steps away, from what I understand, he'll lose out on certain bonuses and so on. So while he'll always have a lot of opportunities, either even to go on his own in terms of agenting or maybe using this as a stepping stone to like bigger media, like he has a lot of incentives to stay. They have the incentive for keeping him around, especially for the TV contract renewal, because that seems to be his specialty. It's a good opportunity for Stephanie to learn even more. Although I'm sure she learned a lot just from observing how he negotiated prior, but now he's sort of inside, so you can get that. But I don't think like he wants to be co-CEO. Like, yes, he could defer to Vince because he had all the respect in the world for Vince. I'm sure he respects Stephanie, but I just don't see that as like a long-term thing. So either I think he leaves soon. I have a Twitter poll that's open at the moment. It'll be closed by the time people hear this, but people are more leaning towards that he's there for the longer term. I don't see it. I think it'll be sort of one of those things, not immediately, but like, remember when Bill Parcells was named the head coach of the Jets and then he like stepped down immediately?
Oh, Belichick.
Not Bill Parcells. Yeah. Belichick, sorry.
Yes. Yep.
I'm showing my knowledge of football here. I used to be a big Jets fan, but Belichick, right? Like the protege of Parcells. Belichick, yep. And then he stepped down immediately, and then he went to, you know, New England. So, like, I think, like, it's more of that situation for Nick Khan. I could totally be wrong, but I'm curious. I just don't see him, like, being happy in this sort of situation long-term, especially if he loses power in terms of putting in his people if they don't remain. So that's something to watch, like, movement at that, like, executive VP level.
So with him and Stephanie being co-CEOs, like, how does that work necessarily?
Well, Stephanie always has that check on him because she's now the chairperson of the board too, right? So, like, yeah, you could be co-CEO, but, like, Stephanie, by default, will rank higher. So they don't always have to come to an agreement on an idea because Stephanie has more power. So, like, he's number two. And then you have in the background Vince, who he was giving the power to Nick Khan. So it doesn't mean that he would always lean towards Stephanie. So there's that, like, depending on how involved that he is. But I think he's definitely, like, in terms of, like, most powerful people in control, either actively or passively, right? Like, he's number two, like, as an employee, but he's really, you know, number three in terms of, like, the power, who controls, you know, the power.
So will the vision of the company change now?
I think that it will. I think it's fair to acknowledge that Vince's booking and so on, however he was involved, kind of grew stale and, you know, that sort of things. And I'm sure Stephanie and certainly Triple H has shown it in NXT, in terms of not necessarily what he feels would work on, like, the main stage, but I think there will be a different vision. I think you're not going to see it right away, but I think in the next 18 months, you're going to see things feel differently. There might be small changes at first, if at all, but I think eventually it'll feel different.
So here's the most important question, and this is the business of the business here. Are they more likely to sell or less likely to sell?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think now that Stephanie, maybe she wasn't sure if she'd have the power. Maybe now, like, now that she has it, why should she give up? Not that she's the one that has to decide, but now Vince is sort of like, now that he's a step removed. The one, I've been thinking about this, like, for a while, and even before thinking about these active scandals, is that one of the things he searched for, and we talked about this in Trump Mania every week, one of the things he searched for his whole life is respect. So the one aspect of respect he can still recover to the mainstream in terms of business is to go out on top making a lot of money, and making a lot of money internally with a company like WWE. Yes, they've gained a lot more media recognition and respect, but, like, to cash out to another conglomerate is probably the best chance he can leave with respect and get a lot more money. So I think that it will be sold in the next few years.
To who and for how much?
You know, people always talk about, like, to a media partner. So that feels most likely. You have, though, like, Dwayne Johnson is somebody that can raise a lot of capital. I mean, the XFL, of course, is a tiny fraction of that. But for somebody that would be interested in it, you know, you have him out there with these investors, sports, like, it could be even a pool of people that we're not even aware of. Could Tony Khan convince his father to buy it? Would there be antitrust issues? I'm not sure. Like, WWE ran so long and fast without really having to deal much with antitrust. Only maybe, like, going back to the NWA, did you have antitrust issues? I might be wrong about that. But probably not the most likely thing. And then you have, I don't see it as, like, a Disney thing, maybe NBC Universal. So, like, there's a lot of potential buyers for it, and like especially people that want to invest in sports or entertainment or sports like properties, some of these like financial firms we might not even have heard of that would be interested in buying it, if only to invest and then cash out themselves at a later date.
Man, I wonder if NBC would throw them like $6 billion. Like, would that do the trick? You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think like the way I've seen these sales, unless like a company is distressed and like has to sell it for under the market value, you usually see, you know, multiples of what you're actually worth, meaning that like the expectation that, okay, if we buy it for what they're earning now, but we have to look at it like what's the expectations of what they could earn years from now? What can we get out of the property? So for companies, unless they're like about to go under, it seems like if you're selling, you're able to get multiples of what you're really worth year to year.
Man, it's crazy to think they could sell, but I feel like now if Vince really wanted to kind of just make a splash and really end it on a high note, that sale would be the thing to do. The only thing that kind of gets me a little questionable is, like, he had this Netflix documentary, which I guess is on hold for now, but like it needed an ending. Like, how was it going to end? He had his WrestleMania moment again. He wrestled. He got beat up by Austin. Like, it's just interesting to think, to maybe conspiracy theory, maybe, that like his ending of the documentary was his retirement and him selling the company. But that might just be craziness on my part.
Yeah, it definitely seemed like he was towards the latter part, certainly, like, you know, with age and so on. But like the only way to revive something like that, although it seems like it's dead anyway, is like for WWE to go to Netflix and be like, you have complete control. Write it in the way that you want. We'll give you any public footage that we have you can use. You can't, you know, obviously you can't get the non-disclosures or anything like that, but whatever's out there in the public, and you can have our footage. And let's both benefit, you know, from this. But I think, you know, egos and protecting the family name as much as they can, I don't think that will happen. And again, I just shared from June, right, that Page Six report that Vince was shopping a autobiography, right? That seems like forever ago now, like unless he would admit to these things. And it would probably seem like a little bit early to be like show remorse, right? Like when it's so early on, that might be like a way of like reforming his image, as I think out loud. And then Abraham Reisman, you know, his Ringmaster book, right, that's supposed to come out in March. I'm curious if some arcs are out there already. You have to sort of like get these things ready well in advance if there's going to be the opportunity for that revised final chapter, or adding a final chapter, because whatever was planned, you know, it just seemed like things would just keep going on forever with Vince. Whatever was planned, here you have basically the ending, like if not you know, his death or the sale of a company, you have the ending of his active role, and that's a pretty big exclamation point to end on if you can. So the book isn't supposed to be out for 7 months, but I know that these things are slow going in terms of like including like up-to-date news.
It's funny to think like he's 77, or he's going to be 77 in August. It's like, man, he's still a very virile guy. You know what I mean? Like, he's still got these girlfriends, still got the stuff going on, because you figure like that would be like 20 years in the past. But no, he was still doing his thing, you know, still you know, having all NDAs and causing trouble and all these accusations in it well into his 70s. Kind of surprising. You know what I mean? How this guy, you know, the genetic jackhammer, if you will.
Yeah. Unfortunately, sometimes they say a blessing and a curse. Certainly.
Oh, yeah.
His downfall, right? He was, I don't know too much about his life, but besides what we know publicly, but you know, some people have those problems, often advertisers on podcasts and so on. And we welcome advertisers like that. But, you know, of people having difficulty functioning. But here, apparently, for whatever aspects, he was okay in that way. But he was using it as a curse to torment people and really damage people, unfortunately, from from what we understand. And that's a terrible thing. And it seemed like he, for somebody that looked for respect their whole life, he also remained, at the very least, way of saying it, I guess, emotionally immature, of not understanding how his actions hurt people throughout his whole life, probably from his teenage years. I guess we'll learn more in Ringmaster, but basically from, you know, in the last 40 or 50 years, at least 30 years, and he doesn't seem remorseful of it, and people are still thanking him from it. So it's, he grew up sort of in a weird situation, and he's really never learned, and that's really a sad thing.
Just seems like, you know, it, you know, they say typical billionaire behavior. He doesn't feel like he's going to get in trouble, or doesn't feel like he's going to get caught, or he doesn't care. It just seems like that's just, you know, with Roger Ayers or whatever his name is from Fox, and, you know, a bunch of these big billionaire guys, it always seemed like that was the case, that the law doesn't apply to them, or they don't care, and they just kind of do what they want.
Yeah, and speaking for myself, and certainly things that we covered extensively over Trump Mania, there remain a lot of parallels, in my opinion, to Donald Trump.
Interesting that people were kind of joking around saying that Vince might get into politics now. My God. Imagine him and Trump together as some sort of quote-unquote dream team for the Republican Party. It'd be insane. I know they were joking, but that would be insane.
What about, I'm just having fun with it, but like a special ambassador to the UFC, Dana White, giving him a job? Oh, or I had a joke on Friday where like I found Vince in his ECW days, like with the title belt, to be like, he negotiated, this is a joke, he negotiated the IP for ECW and he's going to run opposition.
Oh my God. The thing is, a lot of people were saying too, like, he has no social life. What's he going to do? That he's retired, blah, blah, blah. Just like WWE was his life. He only did wrestling. Like, what's he going to do now? Who knows, right? I mean, it's very interesting to see maybe what he'll get his hands into.
Yeah, yeah. And I'm not, despite what he's been accused of, I'm not wishing any ill will on him physically, you know, like in terms of his condition, but just in terms of looking at like the trajectory of lives. And I'm sure we've all seen this anecdotally, like people tend to go downhill fast when they lose what grounded them. Like, it's like you could sort of be younger, feel younger than you are when you're like doing the same thing that you've done for 50 years. But here, like, you sort of like disconnect or disassociate from your day-to-day routines. And like, I've seen people's health diminish immediately, their mental capacity and so on. So hopefully for his, you know, for himself and those around him that that do care about him, that he does find a positive outlet to use his time.
I wonder if also this could be, you know, obviously with all the scandals going on, but is it health related at all? Has anybody heard that rumor? Because I also wonder if, like, oh, he's got to get out quick, got to get out now. If it's something poor health. I mean, his brother just passed away, his mother passed away. I wonder if something's going on physically with Vince. Hmm.
And his dad passed away pretty young, right?
Yeah.
Comparatively. So I don't know. He doesn't look good. He aged a lot in the last few years. He doesn't look that old for his age, but compared to who he was just a few years ago, right? You know, and we know that it was Photoshopped a lot, that muscle and fitness cover and that, all of that. But he doesn't look sick, but he definitely looks old. He looks more of his age than he ever has, certainly.
So as far as that, I think we should move on and talk about another topic, as we spent a good chunk of the show on that. But let's talk a little bit about ROH, Death Before Dishonor. Give me some numbers and some figures.
Yeah, so still some fun things to talk about, even though Ring of Honor is being covered really well by the media, but Tony Khan's reporting that this was the fourth highest attendance for a Ring of Honor show, sort of like to date, right, from 2002 to present. I was the Meshuggah, as I put it, that tracked all of that externally, not saying that they used my numbers. Although Mookie, their VP, did have my reports in the past, but I'm sure they had their own ways of tracking that. But I do want to confirm that based on my numbers in terms of what has been publicly reported in the past. Now, a lot of the numbers that I gathered for Ring of Honor were retroactively, meaning that in these days, when I give you numbers, I'm counting the maps and so on. And a lot of the days before, it was what did the Observer report, what did Cage Match report, and so on. But based on what I have from the past, of course, far and away, MSG was the most attended. Other WrestleMania weekends were also the other big numbers, New Orleans and Lakeland. I think Lakeland was about 3,500 to 4,000. So I don't have this final number for the attendance that Ring of Honor just had, but WrestleTix had it at nearly 2,500. Obviously, it would have grown in the days after that. So comfortably, I would say that's fourth. I did have a record of a Chicago co-promotion with New Japan and one of their first shows in the bigger Baltimore venue that they've used the last several years, doing about 2,500. So above those, below the top three. So agree with Tony Khan there. Brandon Thurston had that. The show did 25,000 digital buys. And then combining that with what Tony Khan said, which was that there was a 50-50 split between digital and traditional, which is interesting, that we can say potentially that there was 50,000 buys.
Do you think this is a success or a failure?
I would say a success. Not where they want to be, ultimately. I think it was announced, it was rumored for a little bit, but then announced like two and a half weeks before. Looks like they took a venue that was a little bit larger than they needed, which we've talked about extensively here. So what does it really mean? Okay, so you did over 2,500 ticket sales, but what are your expectations of it, right? If you paid 40 or 50 million, as is rumored, Ring of Honor never put big numbers up on the board. You can go back, and our Impact listeners will love this, right? Impact, not all the time, and many times they had embarrassing numbers, and people would tweet out empty seats, even their best years, because they weren't always the best at venue selection, potentially, and so on. But they had several shows in St. Louis that did several thousand. And certainly they booked the Astrodome for their best attendance ever, but they did do a great attendance. It just didn't look great because it was the Astrodome, right? So impact of them, but they have had those successes, or they had a couple of those shows in Brooklyn at the Cyclone baseball stadium did really well. So impact over its history, even though they've both been around pretty much the same exact amount of time, they have several shows that would beat this number. But in Ring of Honor universe, yes, this is a good number, nothing embarrassing about it, and a good buy rate number, but where are things going? So a good win for today. But again, it's still interesting because you sort of have Ring of Honor brand. People are trying to figure out what it's all about. You didn't give much time to it. You used a fair amount of your talent from AEW anyway. We know the story with the Briscoes now we know that they're signed to Ring of Honor. So you have that unique talent to it, but it's not exactly unique. And there's pretty much confirmed that there's no TV deal anytime soon. So what is it? You sort of bring it out for a special appearance every once in a while. So it's still very much in the air if this will ultimately be success, but certainly a win over the weekend.
So 25,000 or so buys, probably a little bit more, but they just lost Jonathan Gresham. What happened here? Is this a big deal? Is this nothing? Or is this, something going to be hitting a larger scale?
Yeah. So I saw PW Torch report, I think originally sourced by the Fightful and so on, that Jonathan Gresham, the former Ring of Honor champion and really the flag bearer, sometimes literally, I think he carried a flag, right? But the Briscoes are the old school Ring of Honor and into the new school, but Gresham was really somebody that really grew out and became the flag bearer for Ring of Honor, even more so than a Jay Lethal, who left and came back and still is like sort of being tied to it. But like Gresham was like Ring of Honor and sort of like represented something unique. He's a shorter person, but like a very talented technician, and really represented it well. And somehow, like from what's being reported, at least, that he felt disrespected by Tony Khan, and maybe he was upset that they didn't speak much, and that his title was being taken away in this manner. Apparently there's a shouting match. You know, who knows? I'm sure more will come out, but that's disappointing, because to be on bad terms with Tony Khan, it seemed like his first potential like big money deal as he would grow with the Ring of Honor brand. Maybe Khan wasn't as sold of it, but like I think Gresham, if he's going on the free agent market now, like for these other promotions that we often focus on, like an MLW or an Impact or an NWA, like he would really bring something unique to it, especially if like he would be exclusive with them. Like one of the things that I think, and again, I don't watch week to week, more from an outsider, but the NWA, like often it feels stale because they'll bring in like a big talented former WWE person that didn't get over that much, or maybe they weren't given that much opportunity. And like, here they are in their like early 40s, nothing wrong with that. I'm in my 40s. And they're being made the champion, or they're competing for the championship and so on. And whereas if you bring in a Gresham, like it brings in something unique. And like, you'd always have that like underdog story where he can fight these monsters and like, you know, ultimately win out and something. So if I was Billy Corgan or his team, like that would be something. And it's sort of like they like the tradition, like obviously in a different way, a modern way, but like he is very much that like Luthez type, meaning like no nonsense, not much gimmick, except for like the octopus thing, but like boots, wrestling, like tradition and so on, soft spoken, proves himself in the ring. Like I would definitely give him a call and like try and make him like the face of my company if I was like a NWA or maybe like an MLW type. Like with Impact, I think like it's hard, like everyone's sort of like, again, I'm not there day to day or like watching week to week, but everything sort of like congeals into one there, and I'm not sure if he would stand out as much there. I know he's had matches there, but like for those other two brands, I would like, that would be somebody that I would want to consider as like a top person if it was possible.
Interesting. Tony Khan, obviously he's the owner. It's his vision. He wants to have a different ROH than maybe, you know, the prior regime had, and maybe Gresham's in a part of it. It's all on his idea, his vision for the guys, but it's just funny. He gets Gresham. He's the champion. He turns him heel. Then he loses the title. So it didn't seem like Gresham was happy with either of those decisions.
Yeah, and I wasn't even aware, and again, I'll admit, you know, I'm not following the storylines week to week. I wasn't even aware that he was a heel, but like, yeah, to not give him that much spotlight as the Ring of Honor champion and then switch things up a little bit, he doesn't seem like he'd be a heel at all to me. And obviously Tony Khan is a big Claudio fan, and nothing wrong with giving someone a hug, but we've all seen the picture. So obviously he has his favorites, which you have to, right? Like as a creative person. But I think that's a missed opportunity, especially as you, like, you want to grow and change things, but like to keep switching up all the belts before you even have like a consistent outlet for them, I think it like takes things away.
So obviously Gresham's going to be gone. He asked for his release. PW Torch is saying he is gone. So it doesn't seem like it'll matter in the grand scheme of things, because it just didn't seem like Tony Khan was pushing him anyway. Just the gist that I'm getting from it.
Yeah, I guess like if ultimately he would just go further down the card and, you know, not be noticed as much, then like, you know, it's better that he leaves now without like tarnishing himself. Like when AEW started, like everyone was happy, right? Like who got a job. And then as people leave, whomever it is, you know, they have, like any job, right? Like they have resentment and bad things come out and so on. So like no one thinks of Tony Khan as perfect, but like it would be like there's sort of this narrative where WWE is bad and AEW is good, but whereas they're both businesses, certainly WWE could improve in a number of ways, but AEW has its own issues too.
Yeah, and a lot of people were attacking Gresham all of a sudden that he actually first released. Everyone's saying he's too short, you're a small guy, this and that. And Jordan Grace came out and was basically saying, you know, you don't attack Eddie Kingston for his body or Deonna Purrazzo or Adam Cole. Or when they do get attacked, everybody goes crazy, but it's okay that you're attacking my husband, even though he because he's short, basically, is what she was saying. So I just found that interesting, too. It was like, as soon as he said he wasn't happy there, there was like a groundswell, I guess, of AEW fans that completely turned on him, where we're talking about he's too short and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, and I'm not surprised. And we've talked about that, I'm forgetting the word which I've used before, but like that fandom enthusiasm and sort of like blinders on, where you're like completely passionate about this company and you're either with us or against us. And we've seen it with WWE. We've talked about it with Impact fans even to this day, or AEW, where people will be like that. But although I made a little bit of a joke about it on Twitter, like I feel bad for Jonathan and Jordan over the last few weeks. Jordan, obviously, she admits that she said something not smart, like about Chris Benoit, that because of the brain damage, CTE, he wouldn't even remember things, so he wouldn't be a good wrestler today, where, you know, it upset woman's family, understandably, and, you know, Chris Benoit's son, you know, was reached out to and so on. So they're just not having a good several weeks, but I hope things turn around for them, and they certainly have the capability of doing that.
Now, completely going in another direction here again, wanted to talk to you about MLW. Are they running a show at a space center or something? What is going on with MLW?
Yeah. So first we're looking for patterns. So we know in August that they're running in Texas at a high school, and that's being promoted by a Lucha Libre promotion. And now in the same vein, in September, they're running with Atlanta Lucha Libre, or Lucha Libre Atlanta. I might be mixing up the name, but basically one of the most successful local promoters that we've talked about is that in their Espacio Discotec space, that they've been drawing 1,200, 1,300, you know, sellouts. So probably neck and neck with like a Northeast Wrestling when they run Mid-Hudson Civic Center. But just with Lucha Talent, they've been packing out this this disco, I guess. This promoter worked with Championship Wrestling from Atlanta. Marquez smartly connected with them when Center Stage wasn't going to work out, apparently. And they figured maybe, oh, okay, they do so well, so if we work with them, maybe we'll pack out the house too. But they just got, I think, a couple hundred when they ran. So now MLW is co-promoting with this promoter. And MLW, interestingly, announced it as the Space Event Center. But in my Google Maps research, it is the same venue that this promoter runs that houses Space Event Center, houses Espacio Discotec. It's inside there. So I'm assuming it's the same space. When somebody buys tickets, it goes through this promoter. Again, not MLW, the second show in a row where this is happening. And the first row is still sold out. So I'm not sure if MLW is going to do this with every show. Like if they're running again, like Melrose Ballroom, I don't think they need to do this. They could just do it themselves. But it's a different process. And I think sure they did their research on the promoter in Texas. I'm not aware of any of those attendance numbers that they've run in that high school before, in the Austin High School. But here we know of the Atlanta promoter that they do really well in this venue, and they're going to be controlling the promotion. So I don't know if they'll be like promoting it as a Lucha show with MLW talent or promoting it overall. I think it'll do better if they, again, promote a Lucha show, but I don't know. You don't want anyone to be disappointed with the other matches if you're coming just for Lucha. But I think it's a smart way of doing it. But it's interesting to see how MLW has quietly pivoted with these two upcoming shows towards a different way of promoting, sort of like handing this off to another promoter who are actually handling and processing the ticket sales.
It's funny with MLW. It's like, you never know where they might pop up next. You know what I mean? I always get that feeling like, where's the next go? Space Center? All right. High school gym? You know, ECW Arena? All right. Like, anywhere and everywhere, they'll pop up.
Yeah, I think it's good to, like, experiment, especially they're sort of like that alternate brand. They're not really here nor there. Like, too, sort of like they have a national profile, so they're, like, too big to be small, but they're kind of small now, especially like as a draw. They had put up some big numbers. Maybe as I learned more about venues and so on, maybe those numbers were a little bit higher reported than I had thought at that time. I don't know. But sort of like they're still trying to find their way, but probably the most important thing for them continues to be having that ongoing Be In Sports contract. As we talked about, they signed a deal for the Be In Sports Extra, which is the digital tier. So that relationship continues to grow and solidify. So that's a good thing for them. Probably, especially, although they've talked about doing house shows, probably especially with the way that they're doing shows right now, the most important thing is to keep costs down. If they're not money makers, which they could be, at least not money drained, so that you can have the content and make it look good and have as many people in unique venues as possible, so that it looks like a good TV show, especially for Be In Sports executives as they look at the tapes.
Let's move on to GCW. What's going on with GCW?
Yeah, so GCW smartly announces another gathering, I guess you would call it, Second City Summit. So they're going to have another destination wrestling event. I think this is the one over Labor Day. Just looking that up, as sometimes I get a little bit confused because they do a lot, as we know of. Yeah, so this is going to be the Labor Day weekend in September show, of course, piggybacking off the big AEW events in Chicago. And they'll be bringing in other promotions too in their venue that they've done well in the past, the Grand Sports Arena in Hoffman Estates. They tagged in the post Black Label Pro, again, who they've worked with before. So of course we'll see them as part of things, probably some other promotions as well. But it just made me think about it that, as we've talked about, like with promotions like MLW and Impact, and NWA still does their own things, but especially with like an Impact, it's hard when you go on the road yourself. But like when you connect with like WrestleCons or WrestleMania weekend events or SummerSlam events with Conrad and so on, especially if you can tape programming, you have, you know, built an audience, or if it's house shows, this is a way of like having like somewhat of a guaranteed audience. So like that seems to be like the path forward for a lot of these promotions to do. So it's something to keep looking at. Interesting thing to look about for GCW, as we talk a little bit more about Starcast Weekends, is that GCW is doing well in their fairgrounds. As we saw, the fifth row now sold out. Sixth row was added for sales. GCW, as we've talked about, does that regularly where they might have like just two or three rows. And then like if that does well, they add more and they keep like GA open. Now, in terms of Ric Flair's retirement, the lower bowl premium is sold out at Municipal Auditorium, but the standard seating in the lower bowl is still available. The upper bowl is still available. So again, I'm going to hold to my conservative prediction of 1,500. I think that the final number will be reported about 1,500. I can definitely be wrong about that, but that's what I'm thinking about right now.
What about New Japan Pro Wrestling?
Yeah, so they have a show as we record tonight on a Sunday night back in the Grady Cole Center. So a couple of weeks ago or a week ago, I had a count of about 550 in terms of looking about tickets that were on sale or not yet. Today I counted 220 tickets still available. Now I wish I had counted how many originally I thought were on sale. So, but I would say like with the pickup, probably they'll have, I would speculate about 700, 750, 800 in the building. So Eddie Kingston will be there. So they have now who's become a hot national star. So that certainly helps them. Now, a show that was called a big show, but I wouldn't say it's so big, but on September 11th, just coincidentally, the date, of course, that it all rings out in our mind, having nothing to do with that, but they'll be running Sam's Town, the venue that we're all familiar with in Vegas that became a staple of Ring of Honor in its later days, and certainly Impact following that, seats somewhere between 700 and 900. They'll do a taping for their U.S. Streaming programming. Again, I think that's a good selection for them.
So what is going on with the Ric Flair retirement?
Yeah, so that's just like what I was saying, like that my prediction again is like 1500. I feel like just looking at it, like the lower bowl premium seats are sold out, but the standard on the floor in the upper bowl is still available. So I think like
maybe so it's technically not a sellout as of yet.
Yeah, no, and I don't think like you could set it up like in a certain way and call it a sellout, but you have a lot of different permutations you could do with that building, but it's a gigantic, gigantic building. So I think like,
do you think walk up though, with all the people in town that weekend, maybe?
I think the way it is though, like if you came in for WrestleMania and WrestleMania is on a Saturday night, like your flight is probably Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon.
Okay.
And you'd have to write, like you'd have to book another hotel room and then miss a day of work. So I don't think you'll get like the casuals there. So unless something big picks up, I just don't see that happening. And I think maybe like it was a mistake to move from the fairgrounds. The auditorium isn't going to be that expensive that it'll be end up being that big a deal, but I don't think it'll be worth the change, but curious to see.
Yeah, because Raw, it's not like they're going to be in Nashville too. Raw that Monday is in like Texas, I think. So I think it's in Houston. So there's definitely not going to be people hanging around as far as WWE fans concerned.
Yeah, that makes sense. And like certainly like I think with like somewhat of like a bigger attraction, there's only so much you can do like in terms of like a Ric Flair opponent. I don't know. The announced main event, just it's fine. I'm glad for our friend Jeff that he's having a huge weekend, right? Referee in the SummerSlam main eventer in Ric Flair's retirement match. But like this tag team is just, I don't know, they're trying to put some heat on it in an old school way, which good for that, but it's just not there for me. I don't think it'll be like much mainstream attention or much more than it's already gotten.
So what is going on with CZ Dub?
Yeah, so off and off our radar, but they're trying something unique, maybe even in the vein of something their sort of their stepson, or I don't know how you would call it, like GCW, but you know, they're basically their company
son. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Their company in spirit right now. So they're going to be doing something unique, right? They'll be live in front of the Philadelphia Museum of Art at the Oval. This is a free show, beer garden, Ferris wheel, food truck. CZW presents live at the Oval Saturday, August 20th. And it's a free show, right? As they mentioned, so kind of unique. I was joking around about something not being this classy since Abdullah the Butcher was at a book festival. I'm not sure if you remember the story, John, like 2006 in 2006. And I'm not sure if he was a wrestler or he just wanted to live out his dream. An author had like a death match with him. And it was the weirdest thing, at least from the video and the pictures that I've seen, kind of like horrifying that like, as like literary people and like some families that were like there to like enjoy a book festival. And then suddenly you have like Latter-day Abbey, like just like slicing up this guy and like, you know, giving people nightmares and whatever. So I'm sure CCW.
No, I don't remember that. It's interesting.
Yeah. So I definitely Google that. CZW, I think they'll sort of like know their limits here. I don't think like they're going to be like between the Ferris wheel and like people going to the art museum that somebody's going to go through 20 panes of glass. But this is a good way to get themselves back out there. Sort of a light story to end with.
Pretty cool, like to do something completely different like that. But will that get CZW back on the radar? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I don't know if they have a sponsor for this or it's just something to try. I think it's hard, like, when you lose, like, really, like, again, and I wasn't, like, the closest watcher of it, but somebody that was following it from several steps removed, I think, like, that time, like, what was it, a cage of death when, like, Brett Lauderdale and Nick Gage, like, stepped into the cage or however it played out, like, all of the buzz and energy that CZW had was, like, sucked out. Went directly to GCW, and they just, like, took off from a rocket from there.
Yep, 100%. So let's head towards the plugs here as we end the week. Got to mention Middle Kingdom Wrestling, MKW. Heard them at the top of the hour. Lavi, I know you love those guys.
Yeah, so MKW and Adrian and the management over there doing amazing things in China and the Asian region, just continuing to bring American style pro wrestling and diplomacy across Asia. Don't lie flat, get up and fight. Great cat wrestling picture. Check out their t-shirt on Pro Wrestling Tees. Our friend at WrestleMap has his tweeted out an awesome picture of it. Looks great for the summer. So definitely check them out. But for me, check out my long-form articles on lioncubjobsearch.com. Follow me on Twitter at LaVieMarg, LaVieMarg. Call for sponsors. We love MKW. We have room for more. If you're listening to the show, we know so many in the business. Follow us closely. Some of our biggest fans, we welcome you. Become part of our brand. We believe in you. Believe in us. Let's work together on things.
And of course, for me, you can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Two Man Power Trip. Check out the website, tmptempire.com. And of course, Patreon, patreon.com/tmptempire. I'd like to thank everybody out there for listening. We'll see you right back here next week for a little business of the business. We'll see you next week. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You can follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You can check us out on Facebook. You can subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/tmptempire to become a patron. And also check out the website tmptempire.com and buy a shirt at prowrestlingtees.com. Two Man Power Trip, where the power lies. Brother.